The Senate Judiciary Committee voted 13-6 along partisan lines to confirm Judge Sonia Sotomayor to a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court this week. Groups like the National Rifle Association and the anti-abortion Americans United for Life had spent the past few weeks furiously urging no votes on President Obama's first Supreme Court nominee. The lengthy confirmation hearings at which Sotomayor was questioned by senators earlier this month included a constant barrage of questions by Republican lawmakers as to her ability to make impartial decisions. Only one Republican, Senator Lindsey Graham, voted for Sotomayor. Among the six Republicans who dissented, Senator Grassley claimed that he was, quote, not sure that Judge Sotomayor is capable of wearing the judicial blindfold. He added, unfortunately, I'm not convinced that Judge Sotomayor will be able to set aside her personal preferences and prejudices. The breakdown of votes reveals how partisan these decisions have become in recent years. Most Supreme Court nominees before the time of Judge Alito and Roberts were confirmed with overwhelming bipartisan majorities, both in committees as well as the Senate. My guest is Marjorie Cohn, professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. She now joins us to have a follow-up interview. Welcome back to Uprising, Marjorie.
My pleasure, Sonali.
We had first talked to you when Sotomayor was first nominated, and since then, of course, the hearings happened, which our station carried live along with some national programming and commenting, but we haven't had the chance to talk to you about the hearings themselves. Certainly, it's no surprise that the National Rifle Association and the Americans United for Life organization have been lobbying against Sotomayor. So those are sort of fairly standard Republican issues. But this whole question of prejudice and that she would not be impartial, were you surprised by how much play that got in the confirmation hearings?
Well, frankly, I was. If they had really taken apart her record and looked at her hundreds and hundreds of decisions, the Republicans would have found that she's actually to the right of Souter, certainly on criminal justice issues, and she's very moderate. She's very cautious. She is not a flaming liberal, which is the way they painted her, and clearly they were getting pressure from the interest groups, as you said, the NRA, I don't like to say right to life, but the anti-choice people. The tone of the hearings was quite disturbing. It was racist. It was sexist. It was condescending. They were very insulting to her and read from anonymous reviews of her, explaining, you know, complaining about her temperament and that she's aggressive and you know, I mean, if you look at Scalia, there's nobody more insulting and arrogant on the bench than he is, and because she's a woman, somehow it's not okay for her to be a strong questioner. And when Grassley said she can't put aside her biases. Very condescending. I mean, look at Chief Justice John Roberts, who swore he'd be impartial, and he has just voted in lockstep with the radical right wing. And it's really astounding that the Democrats were so timid in their in what they did. I mean, they were trying to defend her and saying, you know, look, she was a former prosecutor. She's really tough on crime. She's tough on defendants. Nothing about the constitutional rights of criminal defendants.
It seems as though the Democrats were fighting the fight based on the Republicans' terms rather than their own terms.
Exactly. And in fact, they should have come out and said, look, we need balance on the Supreme Court. We have four, not just conservatives, but radical right-wingers. We have Scalia, Alito, Roberts, and Thomas, who are really, really far on the right. And we need some balance. And, you know, interestingly, Lindsey Graham, who voted for her, and he said she can be no worse than Souter from our point of view, and I think he really hit it on the nose, and she will probably be to the right of Souter, although we don't know. She's been very, very cautious as an appellate court judge. Maybe when she gets on the Supreme Court, she is a strong woman. Maybe she will stand up to Roberts and carve out a real progressive role for herself. I don't know. But, I mean, if you look at her record, she's agreed with Republican colleagues 95% of the time. She's ruled for the government in 83% of immigration cases against the immigrant. She's ruled for the government in 92% of criminal cases, and she's denied race claims in 83% of the cases. And if they had really looked at her record, they would have seen that. But these Republicans decided that the lobbying by the pressure by the gun rights and anti-choice people was stronger than their need to show their constituencies that they are not anti-Latino, because some of them have very strong Latino constituencies, and that's why I think that it was a lobbying from these right-wing groups that put them over the top. She's gone both ways on abortion cases. It's not at all clear what her position is. She is a Roman Catholic, although Obama did appoint her, and even though she said nobody in the White House asked her about abortion, they must feel fairly confident in her pro-choice stand, although it's not really clear from her decisions. And in terms of the gun rights, she ruled according to the law in a Second Amendment case. The Supreme Court had said in the Heller case that the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment means the individual's right to bear arms in federal cases, but Scalia's decision specifically said we're not deciding whether this applies in state cases. And when she was on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Sotomayor handled a case where the question was whether nunchucks, which are these martial arts weapons that can crack skulls, could be regulated, or whether this came under this Heller decision, and she ruled, rightly so, that in fact the Supreme Court did not say in Heller that that the right to bear arms was an individual right in state cases. That's an issue that remains to be seen, and that's the one decision that the gun rights people are so upset about.
So it's incredible to see these right-wing judges on the Supreme Court that really fit the definition of so-called activist judges, a term the right likes to use a lot, but somehow they were attempting to apply it to Sotomayor. And I'm wondering if you think that aside from the lobbying efforts by the gun rights groups, by the anti-choice groups, how much of this was less about sort of rallying the base and also perhaps partly about we're just going to stand firm as we can against pretty much anything and everything President Obama does as a tactic, because we're in the minority and, you know, we can't lose anymore, or maybe they think they can't lose anymore. I mean, how much do you think this was a part of this tactical opposition, broad opposition to anything and everything Obama does?
I think part of it was, definitely, and certainly we're seeing incredible partisanship since Obama was elected. This could cut both ways, this Republican opposition, and evidently there are going to be just a handful of Republicans that will vote for her confirmation next week in the Senate, although she will make it easily because there are so many Democrats. But this could either signal that Obama should not go further to the left on his next appointee because there was so much opposition to Sotomayor, who's a real moderate. On the other hand, it could also signal that the Republicans aren't going to support anybody he puts up, so why not put up a real liberal, a left liberal, a progressive, someone like Thurgood Marshall, William Douglas, or William Brennan, who is really going to be a strong progressive counterweight to the radical right wing. Now, the hope is that Sotomayor will do that. We'll see. She's been very cautious, but again, time will tell. Once she gets on the Supreme Court, she will be playing a very different role. She won't be a court of appeals judge where she has to follow the law and follow what the Supreme Court has done. I don't mean to say that she doesn't have to follow the law, but she'll be on the Supreme Court where she will be in a position of making law, even though judges say they don't make law. They make law all the time, and every law student knows that.
So you're saying that it could cut one of both ways. I mean, from the massive amounts of opposition and the traction through the radio and TV echo chamber, the Republicans seem to have made such a big fuss about Sotomayor that I'm just wondering that the Democrats and Obama may go the other way, especially given the Democrats' lukewarm response to the Republican attack, that the next nominee, when the next opening appears on the Supreme Court, is going to be even less liberal, if possible, than Sonia Sotomayor. So it really, I think, depends on, I mean, how many Americans do you think even care as much about, you know, what the politics of Supreme Court nominees are? People may not realize how much it affects their lives.
I think they don't. And a lot of it comes from the media and propaganda and Rush Limbaugh and what we hear in the press. And, you know, the fact that she is a woman, which will bring to two to the number of women on the Supreme Court, the fact that she is a Latina, which is very, very significant. I think most people know that. Americans know this is going to be the first Latina on the Supreme Court, and she is a woman. But beyond that, they're subjected to a barrage of real misinformation from the right wing. The Democrats did support her, but they supported her by going on the defensive and saying, look, you know, she's tough on crime. And instead of saying, look at what we need to balance, look at the, you know, turning it around and saying, look at what we've got, these four extreme right-wingers, the court is so delicately balanced, and now Kennedy is siding with the conservative wing in 83% of the cases, and Roberts has done a masterful job of moving him to the right. So the court is precariously balanced. The politics do matter, regardless of what they say. She says that her, Sotomayor said her judicial philosophy is fidelity to the law. Well, everyone would say that. I would love to hear a candidate, I would love to hear a nominee to the Supreme Court get up and say, my judicial philosophy is the protection of human rights. I don't think we're going to hear that.
My guest is Marjorie Cohn, professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. We're talking about the vote on Sotomayor. She just passed the Senate Judiciary Committee vote 13-6 with 12 Democrats and one Republican voting for her, six Republicans voting against her. She now faces a Senate vote next week. You said basically that she's expected to sail through that. I'm wondering what you think the fallout will be for those senators with large Latino constituencies that are planning to vote against her. Do you think that they may face enough of a fallout from this vote? Do you think that enough people are paying attention?
I don't know. It remains to be seen whether Latinos are going to think they may well say, look, this is the first Latina appointed to the Supreme Court. My senator voted against her, and so in a close race for senator, they might say we're going to vote against her. I mean against the Republican senator who voted against Sotomayor. I don't know I don't know. You know, it's interesting that the Wall Street Journal had a headline that was called "Nominees' Criminal Rulings Tilt to the Right of Souter." You know, that's what the Wall Street Journal, which is the Republican newspaper, was saying about Sotomayor. And Benjamin Cardin, a Democrat from Maryland, on the panel who voted in favor of the confirmation of Sotomayor, said, quote, "I want a justice who will continue to move the court forward in protecting important civil rights. I want a justice who will fight for people like Lawrence King, who at the age of 15 was shot in a school because he was openly gay. I want a justice who will fight for a woman like 28-year-old Californian who was gang-raped by four people because she was a lesbian. And I want a justice who will fight for people like James Byrd, who was beaten and dragged by a truck for 2 miles because he was black." This is about the strongest statement I heard from any of the Democrats about wanting a really progressive justice who is going to fight for human rights and civil rights. I just didn't hear that from the others. I heard some positive things from the newest senator, Al Franken, who was when they were talking the Republicans were talking about strict construction of the Constitution, and the right to abortion is not in the Constitution. Al Franken said, well, neither is the right to birth control. It's not in the Constitution either. And yet the Supreme Court has ruled that states cannot prohibit birth control. I think he played a constructive role. It was his very first, almost out of the box, first official hearing as a new senator, and I think he is going to be a strong senator. He made some very strong comments yesterday during the vote as well. So I think that he will be he will not be as passive, I guess you would say, as some of the other Democrats.
Finally, Marjorie, in light of how important Supreme Court decisions are, I want to take advantage of you being on the line with us and change tack a little bit for the last few minutes to comment on a Supreme Court ruling that happened earlier this year, but that really went under the radar. Only the New York Times and a few other media institutions have covered it, and that is the decision Ashcroft versus Iqbal, which has been invoked apparently more than 500 times in just the last 2 months and can have a really big impact on the ability of just ordinary people to bring up lawsuits. Can you explain this decision to us?
Yes, Javaid Iqbal was arrested in New York in 2001 in November after 9/11 for fraud with regarding his identification documents, and he was placed in detention in the Metropolitan Detention Center in New York. And they said, "Well, he's a person of high interest," and Iqbal in this lawsuit is saying that was solely because of his race, religion, or national origin. And he said that when he was transferred to a special unit, the prison guards picked him up, threw him against the wall, kicked him in the stomach, punched him in the face, dragged him across the room. He was strip searched, body cavity searches. He was called a terrorist and a Muslim killer, and they refused to give him sufficient food or allow him to pray and have access to his counsel. So he sued Ashcroft because Mueller, head of the FBI, and then Attorney General John Ashcroft and FBI Director Mueller, saying that they violated his civil rights. And in a 5-4 decision, with Justice Kennedy writing the decision and being the swing vote, the conservative majority threw out his case and said that there could be no liability on the part of these superiors for what their inferiors did, for what the people subordinates did, and that the just pleading in the initial complaint that the superior should be liable is not enough. There has to be extreme detail about Ashcroft and Mueller actually knowing what their subordinates were going to do. This is really disturbing because it's going to raise the hurdle. It raises the hurdle for all plaintiffs in civil suits to get past the initial pleading stage to state a case to go to trial. I mean, this was not a decision on the merits of the case. In this case, the Supreme Court threw out the complaint and said, "You, Mr. Iqbal, you can't even litigate your complaint." And this is quite disturbing. Fortunately, this does not affect criminal charges against the leaders of the Bush administration on the basis of command responsibility, where under command responsibility, which is enshrined in our law, the doctrine of command responsibility, the commander, all the way up to the commander-in-chief, and that includes Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, etc., either had to know or should have known that their subordinates would be torturing, abusing prisoners, committing war crimes, and did nothing to stop or prevent it. So that is still part of the criminal jurisprudence, even though Obama is mildly resisting investigations and prosecutions. He may not be able to resist them ultimately. And I'm talking about prosecutions of the higher-ups, not, as Eric Holder said, the people who didn't follow the torture memos, which implicitly, of course, sanctions the reasoning in the torture memos. But Arlen Specter, who is the newest, not the newest, because Al Franken is the newest Democratic senator, but the second to the newest Democratic senator because he switched parties, introduced legislation called the Notice Pleading Restoration Act, which would return pleading standards, in other words, how you plead in your complaint, what you say in your complaint in a civil case, to what they were before Iqbal. So far, none of Specter's colleagues have signed on to his bill.
So this would basically address the dangerous precedent that the Supreme Court has set for
yes.
pretty much all civil litigation?
Yes, yes. I mean, this is not just a war on terror case, so-called war on terror case. It's also an anti-plaintiff ruling, and we're talking about plaintiffs, the little guy.
So anybody who wants to file a lawsuit and may not have right at the outset the most concrete facts could have their case thrown out right from the start based on this precedent, no matter what the issue is.
Right. And it's always been that, if you may not know all the facts. You don't know all the facts until you get the discovery. But if there's enough to state a case, a prima facie case, they call it, a bare bones case, then you can go further to discovery and see, and there'll be motions to dismiss and summary judgment and all of these other things. It doesn't mean you're going to win on the merits, but it means you can have your day in court. And this means that the little guy who sues the insurance company, who sues a hospital for doctors for malpractice, who sues a corporation, who sues the employer, is going to have a much, much steeper hill to climb, and it's a very, very alarming decision.
Unless Arlen Specter's bill gets more support.
Right. Hmm.
Well, Marjorie Cohn, we'll certainly follow this story. Thanks so much, as always, for joining us.
My pleasure, Sonali.
Marjorie Cohn is professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, and she's been talking to us not only about the Sotomayor nomination, but also a decision that took place earlier this year, Ashcroft versus Iqbal. You can certainly Google that. IQBAL is the spelling of that, if you want to find out more about what that case is and its repercussions.